And now, live from New York City via Los Angeles, California, it's time for The View from Over Here with the man who has a view for all seasons, your host, Stan Weisleder.
Okay, we got the finger.
We got the
finger.
Hey, you people out there, this is Stan Weisleder on The View from Over Here. With me today is Malcolm Berman, our producer.
Only today?
Well, every day. It sounds, today. You're fired. Get out.
Yes, Donald.
Anyway, we are broadcasting from the Mark Grau Studio in Burbank. And if you're not listening, you can get this program at any time by tuning into Malcolm Digital Radio, no matter where you are and no matter what time of the day it is.
And no matter if you want to or you don't want to.
Yeah, what the hell. Malcolm, so how you been?
I've been okay.
Good.
Next.
So how's your friend Donald Trump doing?
I was listening to Donald yesterday, and it's funny. I have a feeling he wants to go back to the old West when everybody was armed.
And shoot someone.
Yeah. Now, it seems like, especially with these people who are against gun control, they say, oh, if people were armed in the theater, or if people were armed in San Bernardino, or if people were armed in Paris, then the police wouldn't know who to shoot. Who would be a terrorist and who is not the terrorist? Everybody would be having guns and shooting it out.
It doesn't make sense. However, I did in my blog this week make a couple of suggestions, which if they have the guts to implement, I think that would help the problem.
Dig, I may tell me. What are those?
Well, but let me read it to you with the beginning at all.
Okay.
Okay, the whole enchilada.
Wake me up when you're finished.
Okay, I call this the greatest country in the world and what we have to do in order to keep it that way.
Yes, Donald.
So let's go back a bit in time. In March of 1942, 3 months after the entry of the U.S. into World War II, approximately 110,000 people of Japanese ancestry that resided on the West Coast, only those on the West Coast, not the rest of the country, nor Hawaii, okay? Almost all of them were U.S. citizens, and two-thirds of them were actually born here in the U.S. Well, the government herded them up. Roosevelt signed a order or whatever, and they were sent off to internment camps where they stayed for the remainder of the war.
And all their properties confiscated.
Yes, yet there were no subversive acts performed by these people, no acts of war, sabotage, or terrorism. They were law-abiding citizens. And in spite of all of that shameful treatment, volunteers came from these people that made up the 442nd Regimental Combat Team, which turned out to be our most highly decorated unit in World War II.
But they didn't fight in the Pacific. They fought in Europe.
They didn't trust them that much. But hell, now we're fighting a war today, and make no mistake about it. It is a war, and is far more insidious than the one that we were in 75 years ago.
Okay, let me interject a question before you go. How come we didn't inter the Germans?
I guess
you think it was racial prejudice.
Of course it was.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
They looked different.
Continue. We'll talk about that later.
That I always wondered about that when I was a kid. How come this group and not that group? God, I just don't know. But you said, it's probably racial.
And they found more spy networks at Yorkville
had an extensive spy network here in the U.S. And even after the war started, they were capturing them, those that tried to land via submarine. And you can get all of this on the History Channel. The Japanese made no such moves in that direction.
Continue.
Zero. Okay. So what we did to the Japanese, do we need that going out today with the radical jihadists or whatever you want to call them? Well, I say both yes and no. Okay? Now, in the U.S., we are not against immigration, nor are we against any particular religion. But when you stop to think about it, of all the different countries on our planet, and according to the UN, there are 193 separate countries. Now, some of them are like smaller than Encino, but that's not the point. You have 193 countries or separate independent governments. Yet, of all of those countries, only two of the 193, as far as I know, were made up primarily of immigrants, okay, immigrants, and people who wanted to come here for life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and religious freedom. Those two countries are the United States and Israel. And you have to stop and think about it for a while. Those are the only two countries
that do that.
Okay? Now, when our country was established, the founding fathers, and you've heard that many, many times, these people, not some prophet who says that if you don't do it his way, it's the highway. Okay? And yet you have some people, immigrants in our country, who do not abide by the Constitution, nor any of the laws that emanate from our Constitution. And all they want to do is to promote their own religion and damn all others.
What is that, Sharia law?
I was not going to specify, okay, but by inference, yeah. And what are they doing? They're saying that if you don't do it our way, there is no other way. Okay? And we cannot allow that, no matter what excuse or rationale is given by these people or those that represent them. And when we give in, if anybody gives in and capitulates to those requests, these people are nothing more, in my opinion, nothing more than spineless cowards and traitors.
Agreement. But now the question is,
what do we do?
How do we?
Well, here's my suggestion.
Find them.
You'll find them, they'll raise their heads above water sooner or later.
Well, aside from the fact when they become outright terrorists.
Here's what I would do. First and foremost, our borders, which are unsecured, they have to be made secure. Not just for the Mexicans, like Trump says, or somebody else. They have to be secure against everybody from every country. Okay, because if we have borders that are porous so that people can come and go as they please, that's not a very smart thing to do. It's very stupid. And if that means building a wall, so be it. Okay? And once that is done, other steps that will be taken will be far more effective once we have the borders managed, maintained, or whatever.
I have a question. There's only one border you're talking about for building the wall would be the border between U.S. and Mexico.
The southern border. The northern border seems to be a – well, you have Canada. Canada and the U.S. get along well.
I'm not talking about Canadians coming in. I'm talking about people, let's say the terrorists, who a lot of them are European-born now, as the people from Brussels or from the France were actually native citizens who – now, they could come to the United States or they could come into Canada and come to the States.
Yeah, but usually
they could fly in with passports.
Okay, but usually you go to Canada, unless you're coming through the U.S. or from the U.S. or from the South, the only way to get to Canada most of the times is to fly there. That means going through a regulated airport where hopefully they could put some restrictions in place to catch these people before they even get off the property.
But if you're a French citizen or a Belgium citizen, which a lot of these terrorists are now, and how about the homegrown terrorists?
Let me finish.
The one born here. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Let me get to
suggestion
number two. The next step or second step after, securing the border would be for Congress to pass laws and mandate that anyone and everyone coming to our shores, not just Muslims, but everyone, they be required to sign a loyalty oath, be photographed, fingerprinted, and provide a DNA sample prior to being granted entry to the U.S., unless they're here only for a short visit. And after all of those mechanisms have put into place, any existing illegal immigrants should then be required to comply with all of those conditions within a specified time.
Just do me a favor. Stop bouncing your watch.
If they want to remain here. And then there's a third condition, mm-hmm. because you have to go for the long run. That would be just for now. Now, most wars, in order to be fully won, you have to win the hearts and minds of the people. And this third condition is necessary in order to achieve final victory. And if this is so, then all of the children and of all of the immigrants from kindergarten through and including high school have to be educated in our schools, whether they are public or private, or any of our schools that adhere to the U.S. public school system, where hatred of individuals or their religion is not part of the curriculum. And if we don't do that, we will never win the war against ISIS, ISIL, Islamic jihadists, or whatever you want to call them. So as I look at it, it's a three-step process. Secure the borders for everybody. Number two, have stringent requirements for anybody that wants to stay here. And number three, they have to be educated in our schools, not their own private schools where you don't know what the hell they're teaching them.
But then again, aren't we then forgoing the thing of freedom of religion? Because if you're not allowed to teach your religion within your school, the same way they have...
We don't teach religion in our public schools.
No. So that means people shouldn't be able to go to Catholic school?
No.
They shouldn't be able to go to Hebrew school?
I didn't say that.
But you said they should be teaching our way.
Well, Catholic schools and parochial schools and Hebrew schools, their public school portion of whatever they teach does not promote or preach or talk about hatred of other people or their religions.
Okay. I'm not too sure about that.
Well,
but I won't go into
I would say
details.
Maybe they did 50, 100 years ago, but today I don't think so, Malcolm.
I don't know. I went recently to it was a confirmation for my wife's cousin's son. And I went to it was a church in Encino. And the priest was giving the sermon. It sounded really nice, but it was Spanish. I didn't understand it. And then I asked my wife what it was about. Turned out to be anti-Semitic.
Oh, that, she was that, pulling your leg, probably.
No, because he was blaming the Jews for killing Christ. And I know, being Jewish, I didn't have anything to do with it. In fact, I didn't even know the gentleman.
Yeah, okay.
But there was still that type of thought within the church system.
So it's not the official doctrine of the church. It's individuals that still are hanging on to old ideas.
Well, the official doctrine of let's say, most Muslims is not necessarily hate. As far as you go to the mainstream, the main body of it, they say the Quran teaches love and love for your fellow man. But yet you have...
But you have a large section that say the Quran says not X, it says Y.
But how large is a large section? What percentage of
Muslims? I don't
know,
but it's enough to cause havoc and with all of the terrorist acts that they're committing.
I don't know what the answer is, but I know what the answer is not. And parts of a lot of the people, from what I hear, the ones that are hate America... basically, a lot of people whose homes have been bombed out and whose parents and cousins and grandparents have been killed because of collateral damage. I mean, they weren't part of anything. Now, all of a sudden, there's this rabid hatred of America.
And if it happened
to me, I could see why.
Yeah, that is true. But I still think that in order for America to be safe, we have to do something like the three suggestions that I outlined.
We have to do something. But a lot of what I was surprised to hear, what we're talking about, 12 million, illegals in this country, about half of them came in on student visas or visitors passes. There has to be a better way of tracking them down. And they just disappeared. They didn't come over the border illegally. They either flew over the border or
is because then there were no real procedures or rules or anything to monitor these people except if they would voluntarily check in and say, hey, I've extended I've overextended my time.
Right.
I need an extension for another 6 months or whatever.
But how do we keep track of then the people who come in that legal way? Whereas I said,
I don't think there's any way to go back and get all of the people that are here right away. I think you have to start with the new ones and then work backwards. When you have all of your mechanism in place.
Well, the only thing I find ridiculous, and it's when they pick up the, I don't know whether it's now considered illegal immigrants or undocumented aliens or whatever the term is, but when they commit a crime and they're not sent back.
Well, that's because if it happens in what they call a sanctuary city, I don't know where the hell that idea ever came up, but in these so-called sanctuary cities,
like San Francisco.
Yeah, the local police do not have to remand these people to the federal government, to one of their agencies for deportation.
Yeah, there's certain things that don't make sense. But then Donald's, the whole, I was listening to him, Mr. Trump's, he was talking about...
Say it, the Donald.
The Donald. He was talking about nuclear proliferation. And he was saying that he thinks that maybe we should let Japan get nuclear bombs. He said maybe we should get South Korea be nuclear because North Korea is. And
I would do it differently.
And we shouldn't back them, but we should let them be defensive.
Well, here's what I would do. Of course, I'm not running.
Well, maybe you should. You're not that old.
No,
I mean, ask
Bernie. No. I'm too old. And I wouldn't want the job even if it were offered to me on a silver platter. But what I would do if I were in charge...
I think Marilyn would hand you your head.
I would have this guy in charge of North Korea wipe that. I would have him taken out, including his top generals and whatever, and be done with it. The guy's a nutcase, and we don't need him or his nuclear weapons and threats. He's threatening this country. Give me a break. Is this guy for real or what?
I do not see why they haven't done it yet.
I don't know. It seemed to me it would be in China's and Russia's and Japan's best interest to do so because they surround this guy.
But China is backing him and Russia is backing him.
Well,
I don't think it's him. I think it's the governments of the different countries that are endorsing him.
You know, like a lot of things, they don't tell us until many, many years after the fact. We don't find out. Mm-hmm. Everything is kept a secret for our own good. Okay? These deals.
Well, we don't have the intelligence to know.
Right, because we're too stupid to understand it.
But you know,
like the Iran deal with the nuclear business. That is such a crock.
I see. I don't agree with you. I think it was not necessarily the best deal, but I think it's good.
Well, look at it this way. They are freed up now of $150 billion or something close to that they are going to spend any which way they like, and they're going to spend it all across the planet. And they've already entertained different arms manufacturers from Russia and other countries, not in this country, but all other countries, they're going to spend a lot of that money and give a lot to Hamas and Hezbollah so they can continue their nonsense. So as I see it, it's just a force for evil, not for good.
My question is, the $150 billion, wasn't that mainly theirs?
It's their own money. You're right.
It was frozen.
It's their money.
It's not that we're giving them.
No.
We froze
it's
their
It's their money.
Assets.
It does belong to them, no question about it. But because of the type of a country that it is or the type of people that are running it, they're going to use that $150 billion in detrimental ways or detrimental to us and countries like us.
But you know what I find strange, now with the communication systems the way they are, that various groups can come in and interview the people on the street. You go into Iran and they interview the people of the cafes and they're pro-American. You don't find the anti-American movement until you start speaking to the religious groups. Not even the government is not necessarily more anti-American.
Well, you're right on that. It reminds me of Nazi Germany, where the average citizen was not necessarily a Nazi, but the Nazis took over the country, and if you didn't go along with them, you would be ending up in a concentration camp. Exactly.
But there has to be a way that through communications that we could get to the people of the country.
It's not permitted. Mm-hmm. They don't have full access to the internet.
Well, they're starting to, and there's, I mean, people are getting the internet illegally.
Illegally, yeah. They're not getting it above board. Mm-hmm. You know, it's blocked or whatever. And it's the same thing in South Korea. Mm-hmm. They don't have access.
Well, South Korea, North Korea, they don't.
I meant North Korea, not South Korea. And the same thing in Cuba. There was an article this past week in the New York Times. Even in Cuba, they're only 90 miles away, and they don't have full access to the internet.
Well, in Cuba, do you think that Obama did the right thing?
Well, I think that's one of the few good things that he did, was to open up the door between U.S. and Cuba, because it was ridiculous to be at odds with them for 50 long years. You know, we were the ones that tried to take over their country a couple of times. We were the ones that had plots against Castro. We were the ones that invaded them with that ill-fated Bay of Pigs stunt. They have a right to be pissed. If I were them, I would be pissed also. But after 50 years, it's enough. Look, we're on great terms now with Germany and Japan. At one time, we were ready to kill each other.
Yeah, I don't think Fidel has forgiven us from the statements he has said.
Probably not.
Maybe his brother, Raul.
Yeah, his brother is more amenable, but Fidel is still
bitter.
He's hanging to the old ways. But, you know, that's natural. You know, human nature is what it is. But I don't want to dwell on that. I think all of our listeners know pretty much what's going on out there. But then again, maybe they don't. You ever see these interviews on TV where some reporter stops the average person in the street and asks them some what I think are dumb, stupid, idiotic questions? And they give answers like from a different planet.
Well, I forget what show it was. It might have been The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. And they were asking college kids in the street basic questions like, when did the U.S. get independence?
Yeah, they don't know shit.
One kid says 1984.
They don't know shit, most of them.
And they were asking him, and what's the name of the vice president, George Washington? I mean, they didn't know anything, and it was amazing.
Well, it may be amazing, but it's true.
But I just figured out how Donald could pay for the wall without even having the Mexicans do it. On one side of the wall would be the wall. The other side of the wall would be his hotel. So it could be the Chump Wall Hotel. And he probably could get the money back from renting rooms. And then again, he's not going to get the Mexican workers to do it. But who has he always said, you know, did the wall? The Chinese. He probably should get Chinese workers there, as he's used before.
I don't think.
Anyway, that's my
practical.
That's my answer.
Yeah, the only way if the wall gets built, I think the only way it will get built is if it's done and funded and paid for by the U.S. government. If they get or how they're going to get reimbursed, that's a whole other game, a different story altogether. So who knows?
But I think on the other side, probably the Mexican people or the Mexican government will have handball courts there.
But then it would have to charge to pay.
Right, but then they'd just build a prison around it.
Handball court. That's a lot of handball.
Yeah.
3,000 miles of handball courts.
3,000 miles, the ball.
Well, let me see. What's the border with Mexico? It's about 1,500 miles.
Yeah, I think about 15 between here and Texas. I don't think there's
a... Yeah, if you go to the edge of Texas, about 1,500 miles, maybe a little less. That's a lot of handball.
Handball courts.
Man, that's a lot. You ever play handball as a kid?
I always played handball, but I always played with what's called a Spalding, the big round ball, the pink ball. I never played with the handball.
It's harder.
The black one, yeah.
Yeah,
people
you need
use gloves for that.
Yeah.
But that used to be where my section of Brooklyn, over by Brighton Beach, they had these handball. I think it was Vic Hershkowitz.
I don't know.
It was like a AAA or AAU.
I don't know about that, but I know they had handball courts, and I would go by when I was a kid, and these old guys, man, could they play handball good. Old guys.
And they had 3-4 walls. It wasn't only the wall.
They were like our age, maybe even older.
But what I used to be where I'd watch games where the old guys knew the position, and they played smart.
Yeah.
The young guys had the energy.
Yeah, but they didn't play smart.
And they could run around and hit it hard. But the old guys knew positioning.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I was a great handball player. Really
you
good.
Were?
Oh, yeah. Now, I probably couldn't even move to get one ball from the other.
How did we get to handball from this? Oh, because of the wall.
The wall, okay. The backside of the wall.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to just mention is that don't these candidates
play handball?
No. Every time they talk, they're basically on national TV.
So they forget. So
everything they're saying.
Everything.
I have heard for the last 3-4 months. There's nothing new. I listen to Donald Trump say things. He says the same things. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do
Malcolm,
that.
They all do that.
I listen to, Bernie. Bernie, free tuition, free medical care. I've heard it. They're not adding anything new to the mix. Actually, Donald is, but he's laying out his campaign, which is
well,
sort of ridiculous.
I think they're hoping that people who didn't hear him the first time, maybe they're tuning in now for the very first time.
Well, they should
and
podcast.
And they want to hear this.
They should podcast.
Well, they'll have to come down to this studio and learn that, what we're doing.
You want to invite Donald here?
I did. He never even responded.
Okay, maybe we should put that on email blast to him.
In fact,
all of them.
A couple of years ago, I invited Obama to come down. Never got a response.
Well, I think it's Mike Marone, who has a podcast show, but he has also a television show, he had a podcast, and he invited Obama down. And Obama came, and he came.
Really?
In fact, it was, I think it's Pasadena. He did it out of a garage in Pasadena. And Obama came to his garage in Pasadena to do the show.
Must have really had nothing to do that week.
I don't know. I don't know whether he is. I don't know why someone would be president.
Ego. It's an ego
thing.
There's
so much strain on that.
It's an ego thing. And just think, if you're rich before or whether you're poor before, it doesn't matter. You become even richer when you could get 50 thou a pop for a speech, and that's just for starters.
Well, Hillary was getting, 250,000 for...
Okay, then there you go. So even if you lose, you could go on that speaking circuit and make a lot of money.
I think Donald, it's more ego than anything else.
Of course.
I don't think he needs the money. Or maybe he does. He's refusing
to show
his taxes.
Well, he said other night he's worth $10 billion. That's a lot of money. It ain't chopped liver.
Well, okay? I am getting so tired of him saying, and I'm supporting my own campaign, and I'm not taking money.
Well,
he says that like every 10 minutes.
He wants everyone to know that you can't buy him.
Right, but every 10 minutes, I'm going to build the wall. I'm going to get us. I'm going to get China to whatever.
Yeah, I know. It is repetitious, and I guess he has nothing else to add. He probably doesn't even have all of his platform stuff ready. He probably doesn't have any kind of program already solidified in his mind. He probably doesn't even have all of his so-called expert advisors lined up.
Well, I haven't heard the latest, and that was today about if abortion becomes illegal, would that criminalize the people who get abortions? I mean, right now the thing is, even when it was illegal, the woman would not a criminal, the doctors were criminals who did it. But now I understand that he might want to criminalize the woman who gets the abortion. But that's just hearsay right now.
Man, I don't know. You know what? Even if they want it, it still has to be passed by Congress and the Senate. Okay? He can only make a recommendation for a law. He can't write it into effect and say, here for it or therefore it's going to be XYZ.
Oh, yes, he can, because he could say...
He's not the king. He won't be the king where
no,
you
no,
could
no,
do
but,
that.
But he could say, since we are in a state of war, he can nationalize the government. Send the troops into the streets.
You know what? I think that would be the quickest way to get impeached, thrown out of office.
And then he could become the king. Actually, I think he wants to...
You know what? Clinton, they impeached Clinton.
Yeah, but that was only for sex.
Okay, this is even worse. They were going to impeach Nixon.
Well,
he resigned.
He resigned. That was a criminal act.
Anyway... Enough of that nonsense.
I have an idea. You are the author of a book called, well, you're author of several books, but you are the author of a book called Trees.
Yes.
Now, broad stroke, what is Trees about?
Broad stroke, it's about a group of young guys and girls that start out in Brooklyn, New York. In the late 40s.
I think I know them. Well,
you probably do know some of them. And it's about how they make it to Las Vegas in time to witness and take part in the changing of the whole Las Vegas scenery from the mob to Howard Hughes to corporate America and everything that takes place in between. Now, that's a broad stroke. Going into details, yeah, I would be very surprised if you didn't know some of the people that are in here. Not by the same name, of course, because, you know, they say change the name of whoever you're trying to recreate. So what I've done, if the person was still alive, I say only good things, nothing bad. If the person was dead when this was written, I say whatever I damn please.
Except you're not afraid of retribution from some of the people in Las Vegas?
No.
You don't think those people are out. You don't think there's a hit for you?
No, those people are out. The people that ran Las Vegas, they're no longer running Las Vegas. They sold out to Howard Hughes, most of them, and I have it all in here. And Howard Hughes eventually, you know, cooperated with the government, and they eventually got sold to other aspects of corporate America.
Now, you wanted to read some excerpts. Which excerpt are you reading
from? I just want to read the introduction. It's about two pages. I'll try to make it interesting and not screw up on the words and so forth. Now, the title is very misleading because the book is not about trees. It's a euphemism.
Pray tell, what is a euphemism?
Euphemism is a word that is indicative, or if you look into it, it really means something else. So what does it mean in this case? Well, if we'd never had trees, we would never have life. People would never exist because trees initially formed shelter, fuel, to make a fire, and food.
And oxygen.
And oxygen because it would regenerate whatever carbon dioxide people would create. So it was a cycle. People would create carbon dioxide, and the trees would change it by photosynthesis or whatever the process was, carbon dioxide back into oxygen. And the cycle continued.
But I read the book a while ago, and if I remember correctly, the tree at the distance was a goal that I think somebody would hit a ball, and they would go for the trees.
That's what it is here.
Right. So they would go for the trees. So to me, the word trees would be a goal that you're trying to reach.
Yeah, and it doesn't reveal itself, I believe, until the third or fourth chapter.
Okay, so please don't listen to this.
Okay.
Okay, anyway, start with the intro.
May 4th, 1996, a few years back, okay? Mongoose, one of our main characters, looked askance at himself in the bathroom mirror. He could not believe the reflection of the image that stared back at him. His hair was gray at the temples, but most of what he saw was still black, with only a modest sprinkling of gray throughout. His personal barber, Hollywood Joe, as he was called because he once worked for the studios, suggested he dye his hair. Not completely, just enough to cover up the part of the gray. Mongoose refused. He preferred to rely on his good genes. As he ran his hands over his hair, he could actually feel the difference of the softer strands that had already turned to a silver gray. That, plus a tan that he was always working on, made him fairly attractive for his 62 years. Working out in the gym, which he had detested at first, became a routine that helped keep him in shape. He thought of his father, who had passed away, a haggard old man. Yet in another 3 years, he knew he would be eligible for Medicare and could put in for Social Security benefits without being penalized. From his suite on the top floor of the Desert Winds Hotel and Casino, he had, when the drapes were open, an excellent view of McCarran, the Luxor, and the Mandalay through the floor-to-ceiling wraparound windows. Deciding what to wear was always a chore. His wardrobe boasted a full array of suits, sport jackets, and pants to match, 3 tuxedos, more than 50 shirts, and a dozen pair of shoes with all of the required accessories for any occasion. Frank Rothman told him, "If you dress like you're worth a lot of money, people will think you're worth a lot of money. And if it's success you're after, dress Italian, act British, and think Yiddish." For now, the Morning Mail had his attention. There were the 2 car payment notices, which he would give to his accountant to take care of. The slew of mortgage finance offers puzzled him, since he did not have a mortgage. One piece of mail caught his eye. The return address was of particular interest: Brooklyn, New York. Then he saw the familiar logo, BBC, the Bronzeville Boys Club. He could not wait to open it and revisit old times. "Venus, Han, guess what?" called out Mongoose in the direction of the bedroom. "What?" "I got a letter from the BBC." "The British Broadcasting Corporation?" "No, the Bronzeville Boys Club. Don't tell me that they want another donation." Venus walked into the living room and wrapped her arms around Mongoose. She was only a few months younger than him, but could easily pass for 45. She still had the figure of a showgirl, a trade that she plied for almost 30 years. Tonight she was dressed in leather, with her blonde hair, blue eyes, and pale pink lipstick. It did not matter what she wore. Eyes followed her wherever she went. Talk about good genes. "When you put your arms around me like that, I get an erection." "Erection? You mean hard on." "Whatever. So what's the big deal with the BBC?" "It's another reminder about their 56th anniversary, May 5th, 1996. That's tomorrow, at the Stone Avenue Library. Remember that odd structured building? It was like the castle in Central Park where Hamlet was performed, but it served as the cultural center of Brownsville." "Yes, I do remember," she answered softly as she walked over to one of the windows and smiled back at the memories that called out to her. "It would be nice if we could go. It'd be fun strolling down memory lane. Oh, here's one for you. It's from that guy in Palm Springs, you know, where they take retired showgirls who still have what it takes and parade them on stage in their skivvies." "Yeah, I remember that guy, the one with the greasy mustache who kept comparing me to that cunt Edie Williams. Somehow I had the feeling that all he wanted to do was to slide his hand in between my legs. I thought he wanted to slide his tongue in between your legs. Now, now, don't be jealous. Can I help it if he reminds me of a pimp?" Mongoose kissed Venus on the cheek, walked back to the bathroom, and fixed his gold cufflinks into the folded over cuffs of his sleeves. He was about to select a silk tie to go with his pale blue shirt when he began to reminisce. He stared at himself in the mirror once again, and as though a kaleidoscope opened up before him, he began to think about where he had come from and how far he had gone and all the years in between. And that's the introduction, and then you go to part one. Part one, we're not going to read anything of it now.
Not right now. But
part one deals about their growing up. Part two, they're already in Las Vegas. And part three is a continuation of what they're doing in Vegas.
But actually, I would like maybe we could do installments on a weekly basis.
That would be
intro.
Good.
Maybe part of section one. Okay, guys, next week we will continue with what's chapter one about?
Well, we won't do chapter by chapter. We'll do the most interesting ones. Some of them are developmental, like chapter one is just about where the guys and the girls hang out at the local swimming pool, you know, where they get to admire each other, walk around, things like that. We could. Yeah, maybe we could.
And but by the way, the book can be bought for a film, which we're trying to. Just contact me at tbginc@msn.com. That's tbginc@msn.com, and I'm repping Stan with this. He may not know it yet, but I am.
Hey, Malcolm, if you can get it sold, great.
But I've read it, and it's a really great story, and it could be done in a very interesting way. A lot of the things would be very relevant to today's world.
Well, extremely relevant to anyone who grew up in a major city, especially if they lived in or near the inner, so-called inner part of the city. Like if you came from Brooklyn, New York, or any part of New York City, any part, you will feel at home right here.
Well, Brooklyn, New York is changing so much. I haven't been back there for a long time. And, in fact, a friend of mine was telling me her daughter just got an apartment in Williamsburg.
Williamsburg, at one time years ago, you couldn't even give it away.
No, I remember my aunt lived at Williamsburg over. I don't even know what train it was. It used to come by every 5 minutes, and the whole apartment shook.
And my uncle had
a clothing store in Williamsburg. I forget what street it is, but it was, lower middle, wasn't even middle class then.
It was lower.
And it was, I think, mainly Orthodox Jewish. Then it became, when I became older, it became Latino. But now, my friend tells me her daughter moved in. It's a one-bedroom apartment, right? Small. Mm-hmm. She's paying, I think, $3,200 a month rent. But it's on the 22nd floor. And it's over, and you can see, Manhattan and the bridges. I'm going, oh my God, how things have changed.
They didn't even have buildings that tall in Williamsburg 40, 50 years ago. I remember going through, 50, no, even before that. Because I grew up in Brooklyn, and I remember going through Williamsburg in the 40s and 50s, and that was a place you didn't want to go there, and you didn't want to be caught there at night.
Yeah. Well, when I lived in Manhattan, I lived on the my first place that I lived was the West Village, and the East Village was sort of like the slums and like Avenue A, Avenue B, Avenue C,
which was
the Lower East Side, And basically, that led right into the Bowery, which was, bars and drunks. And now I have another friend whose son moved into what's now called the ABCs.
Yeah.
Avenue B.
They've all moved up. Those so-called Lower East Side avenues, A, B, C, D. They've graduated. The whole city, Lower Manhattan, Brooklyn has been going through a renaissance for the last 30 years, maybe longer.
Well, I always threatened to move back to Manhattan, aside from the fact I can't afford it now, because I used to live on 90th and Central Park West, and I think my $600 a month apartment is probably like about $5,000 a month now.
Well, it's still $600 a day.
Because I had a view of Central Park. But then again, my kids always say, now it gets below 60 degrees, and I'm wearing three jackets, a hat, and gloves. And they said, Dad, you can't go back to Manhattan. You'd freeze to death.
Or you live indoors.
I live indoors. But I think my concept of Manhattan is being single. And
well, Manhattan is nice. There's a lot of stuff to do there, a lot of places to go, a lot of things to see and whatever. Would I want to live there? Only if I had enough money where I could live in the penthouse and look down at all the relatively poor people that have to trod and plod their way through the streets.
Well, I wouldn't want to live in that area. I would still move back. What I found is when I moved to 90th and Central Park West, and I could leave my house and walk into Central Park, and I'm in love with Central Park. Because there are certain areas, first of all, where I was like about maybe 100 yards from the Central Park Reservoir, so I could run. I was right on the street where the horses came down. On 90th Street, the horses would come down from Claremont Stable. Claremont Stable was on 89th Street, but it was a one-way street, so horses used to come down 90th Street. So in the morning, I used to hear the clip-clop of horses.
How about smell of horse shit? Did you have that?
No, the only thing that was bad was in the wintertime when it snowed, you had to watch your step when you crossed the street.
Yeah, you could walk on a landmine.
But, yeah, well, the landmine, ugh. But when I would come home from work, I could just put on my running things and run the park. And in the evening, it was beautiful. I wasn't worried about being mugged, because who's going to mug a guy that has, you know, shorts on and a T-shirt? I had no money. So what are they going to mug me for?
For the hell of it.
For the hell of it. No, I mean, if I was a woman, maybe. But I used to run sometimes the reservoir like at 10, 11 o'clock at night.
Well, there's
and
your
it was
answer.
So beautiful.
There's your answer. If you ran fast enough, they could never catch you.
Well, I didn't run fast enough. But it was so beautiful because the lights of the city would reflect off the water. And I felt so much at home and at peace. And in fact, this time of the year, now we're in March, I don't know if it happened yet or it's about to happen, cherry blossoms, they would be sprinkled all over the reservoir, because especially on the...
Well, that's a springtime thing. Isn't it April? I think it's April.
It could be March or April, depending. But on the east side of the park...
You know where we got those cherry blossom trees?
Where?
From Japan.
Japan.
Same thing in Washington, D.C. They're all over the place. A gift from Japan.
Before or after
World War II. Oh, yeah.
But you know what's beautiful in L.A.? I think it's called jackaroos, the purple plants, the trees that I know in my neighborhood in Sherman Oaks, you know, they flood the street a certain time of the year.
I'm not familiar with that.
And it's beautiful.
Hmm. Okay.
Anyway, what else are we talking about?
Well, I don't know. We're coming near to the end. What else do you have, Malcolm?
What else do I have? Yeah, we were talking about colleges. Now, most people, for some reason, both of my boys one goes to UC school, University of California, and the other goes to a Cal State school.
And it's probably costing you a fortune.
Yeah, everybody says, oh, yeah, you know, they're, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 a year for tuition. No, those guys are paying about $25,000 a year. That's just for tuition. And these are state schools. Yeah. And
what did we pay? You went to CCNY and I went to Brooklyn College. What did we pay back in the day?
They were about City College was about, I think, $30 a term. Plus, you had to buy books. That was the expensive thing.
You still have to buy books.
I know. But then I couldn't afford it otherwise. I mean, in fact, I had to go to work because my father had passed away just when I started college. I had to go to work to afford money for subways,
yeah,
and to buy clothes and for books and to eat.
Well, it's the same thing at Brooklyn College.
My mother covered the rent and everything, so that was...
Same thing at Brooklyn College. And back in those days, you lived at home. You didn't go away because that would add untold thousands to the total bill.
Well, I was unable to go away, but I wanted my kids to go away because it's a different life. I have friends that went to out-of-town, what we call out-of-town colleges, the sleepaways, and they lived on campus. And their college experience was so different from mine. I mean, my college experience, I would get into the morning. I had to take the train, I think I told you earlier, from Coney Island to 125th Street. It took me 2.5 hours one way, door to door. At the end of school, at the end of the class, I just wanted to hop on the train and go home.
Well,
I didn't do anything.
Didn't you sleep on the train?
Well, I slept on the train. I did my homework on the train. I could shower on the train.
Yeah, you could do that.
But the thing was, I did not have any campus life. I didn't get involved with any clubs.
Well, you
or
know
any
what? Today it's
school.
Even gone even further. As part of the curriculum, I don't know if it's the first, second, or third year, all of the students, either they are mandated to or they have the opportunity to get one of the semesters overseas in a foreign country. And a lot of schools, you have to, you must. It's part of it. In some places, it's voluntary based on what you can afford.
Well, my son, Jonathan, who's a junior over at UC Santa Barbara, he wants to go to Brazil for the summer. Actually, it's more than the summer. It's from August through December to do a term there. Originally, he wanted to go. They say, why Brazil? Well, first of all, he studied Portuguese for a year. So, and he's,
okay, so he knows
so
the
he's
language.
Conversant in Portuguese, and he's fluent in Spanish.
Okay.
And he wanted to go to Brazil because of the Olympics that were there this summer.
Okay.
But he found out that they're not taking students during the Olympic time because there's no housing. Now, all UC schools are affiliated with Catholic universities. So he would take classes at a Catholic university, and they would find a place for him. Now, my thing is I'm afraid for him to go any place. Now, any place in the world,
because
Brazil
has
all
of the craziness going on.
And the bad water, then, I mean, when I was a kid, well, I didn't go, but, you know, it was a lot of the people who had money went to Paris, went to Spain. But where do you go now? Without saying, oh, you know, because the Americans are targets. Whether it be Paris, whether it be Brussels, well, whether it be he's part Jewish, so whether he goes to Israel.
I think the safest place in the world other than the U.S. is Israel, and I've never been, but they have very tight security.
I think the safest place is right over here in the studio.
Right here in this studio?
But actually, never mind.
Maybe.
Or Sherman Oaks, I don't know. But, you know, you think of it, if you had a children that was of a college age, where would you want them to do a semester at?
No,
everything
local.
Everything
local.
Is targeted now.
Local.
It's a frightening world out there, even though percentage-wise, you know, of course, nothing's going to happen. And thank God for cell phones.
We mean the actuarial odds?
Well, yeah, the actuarial.
Depends where you live. It's all based on you know what they say about real estate? Location, location, location. Same thing about getting whacked by a terrorist. Location, location, location.
Well, they interviewed Donald yesterday, and they asked him someone asked him what are the three most important things
the federal government.
He said security, security, security.
Yeah.
I think he got because he was in real estate, location, location, location. Then they asked him, aside from security, what it is, he said, education.
Yeah.
And healthcare.
Right.
And I think it was Anderson Cooper said, well, you realize that education and, you know, health, you want federal help for.
Yeah, he was trying to trick them.
Yeah. But it wasn't because education, he wants to be state controlled, not federal controlled.
Exactly. Right.
And health, he wanted to be in the private sector versus the government sector.
Well, yeah, the more you have the government involved, the more screwed up it becomes and the more expensive it becomes.
Well, I'm not necessarily in agreement with that.
Take Obamacare. Yeah. In concept, it's a good idea, but I think they screwed up. It should have been the Social Security system expanded to take into account, as well as Medicare expanded to take it into account. It should have been one program, not 40 million little individual programs across the country. They refer to it as a single payer.
But I'm not sure where the original concept of Obamacare, what he presented, because I know that it's totally different than he wanted because he had to make compromises. So it's really not Obamacare. It's a version of it that he knew that he could pass. But anyway, before we...
It's a wrap. It's almost a wrap.
It's the last minute of the show.
Whatever. Okay, so...
do we have any guests for next week? No.
We have a couple that are pending, and I'll talk about them real briefly. We used to be involved with an organization in Nashville called the Nashville Screenwriters Conference, and people would come from all over the country, and the guy who was running it passed away about a year and a half ago, and I got a call from one of the people running it, wanting to know that, can we put some of their people on the program? I said, yeah, Okay, you let me when. You let me know when, and we'll have as many guests as you want to come on to talk about it.
But can they come in?
Yeah, they're local, okay. So they would come into the studio.
Because I find out, as we agreed upon,
telephones. No, that's a it doesn't work out well.
It doesn't have the synergy.
No. So I'm hoping to get a response where we could get one, at least one, maybe two of these people to come in next week.
Okay. But anyway, I also have to mention that we do have guests in the studio. Could you introduce them?
Oh, yeah, we're going to have to give them a couple of questions. In the other room watching us with very intently is my wife, Marilyn, and we will be married this coming September, 60 years, which is longer than some people live. And also we have our middle daughter with us, Sharon. And I won't mention her age or Marilyn's age. They'll get upset. But anyway, they're in the other room. Unless we put them to sleep, they're still watching.
And they are petrified about speaking, so we're not going to ask them, but we just like to say hello.
Or scare them. Tell them we will bring them in and grill them.
Anyway, as I say, say goodnight, George.
Good night. Good night to all you people out there.
Or good
and remember
day.
To tune in. And
MalcolmDigitalRadio.com.
Yes, tune in to us, and if you can't get us here, you go to Malcolm Digital Radio, and you can get all the back shows, every one, any time of the day, no matter where you are.
So if you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and you're bored and you have nothing to do, go to MalcolmDigitalRadio.com, and you can get The View from over here. You can get Carell, and you can get America Swings with Horace Height Jr.
Yes.
Speak to you next week.
Okay. Good night now. Good day. Good night.
That's a wrap, Aaron.